Can you tell me about the process that led up to deciding to lay ecclesiastical charges against seven of the ministers of the churches that broke away? I mean, it seems like a very extreme measure. Is it that uncommon, and what prompted it?
Well, I didn't bring the charges. They were brought to me, and under the laws of the church, I have to act upon them in a certain way, which I did. What we've said in our church here is that we want to create a space for everybody. We're not imposing anything on anybody against their conscience, but we do require people to live within the rules of the organization. We can't really continue to have people cross the line from legitimate dissent, which is okay, to destructive behavior, which is not okay. And the charges that were laid had to do with allegations of behavior that were injurious to the church and destructive of the authority of the church. So it's difficult to communicate that. I know it seems to some people like a kind of repressive measure, but it really wasn't. It was an attempt to preserve the structures of the church that are in fact the best guarantee of safety for the disaffected people themselves.
So we've heard a lot about this controversy in the media, largely from people who oppose the church's decision. Would you say that the opposition has been overreported, or that the support has been underreported? And where has support been coming from?
I think disaffection and anger always gets more attention from media. We monitor all the letters and phone calls and emails that come into this office, and by a large majority, the support outweighs the criticism. I was in San Francisco a month ago and preaching in the cathedral, Grace Cathedral there, and 1,000 people rose to their feet and applauded the Diocese of New Westminster. And the bishop spoke to them, their own bishop spoke to them, and asked me to bring back to Vancouver the entire support of people in his diocese in California. And I get that, you know, all the time. I get letters from Africa, Asia, Australia, North and South America, people saying that in their own church they cannot even raise these questions. They're repressed, forbidden to speak. And the fact that now in the United States and Canada there are a number of people who are standing up and saying we really need to address the issues of justice, compassion with respect to homosexual people is a torch of hope for people who live in much more repressive cultures.
Can you tell me, you went to the consecration of Bishop Gene Robinson in the States. What prompted you to decide to attend that, and can you tell me a bit about what that was like for you?
Well, Gene Robinson invited me to go, and I happened to be in Toronto at meetings the same weekend, or my meetings had just ended, so it was not difficult to go down. And I wanted to be part of an historic moment in the life of the church. I was glad I was there. What shocked me, frankly, was when I met Gene Robinson for the first time, and I don't know him personally other than that one meeting, was to find him wearing a bulletproof vest. He was wearing a Kevlar jacket all around his torso, and he wore that underneath his ecclesiastical robes all through the service. And that brought home to me in a really, really vivid way the danger in which gay and lesbian people still exist within the Christian church. But I found him to be a man of great warmth, great wisdom, great patience. And there was such joy among the people of New Hampshire, and it's a fairly conservative place. I mean, we're not talking about sort of a radical culture in New Hampshire. There was such evident joy among the people that they'd found a bishop that loved them and that they loved, that it made all of the controversy and the ferocious and vicious words that were spilled about him outside the meeting room, it made them all seem very pathetic and sad.
I've heard the word spiritual refugees used to describe lesbian and gay and bisexual people who have kind of grown up cut off from their spirituality as a result of being brought up in the church and then feeling like they had to choose between the church or their coming out. And I guess I'm wondering what you would say to lesbian and gay and bi people who are spiritual refugees watching this unfold.
I would say that the church needs you, that it's often people who are at the margins of the church or indeed of society as a whole who bear a kernel of truth that the larger society has lost sight of. And sometimes it's people at the margins who bring back to the mainstream community something that they need to know about themselves, or in the case of the church, about God. The remarkable thing to me, and I've known gay and lesbian people throughout my ordained ministry, the remarkable thing is that so many homosexual Christians have not given up on the church, have retained their faith because they've known and experienced for themselves the acceptance and love of Jesus Christ. And they bear witness to that in the church, to people who don't know about it in the same depth. So I would say the church needs gay and lesbian people in order to remain authentic as the bearers of a truly radical and inclusive message of love to the world. And I think it's the kind of courage of the marginalized that restores health to the whole.
That's Bishop Michael Ingham of the Anglican Church of Canada, Diocese of New Westminster in Vancouver. And in Vancouver, for This Way Out, I'm Heather Kitching.